As I grew up, walking in this great big world, I gazed in awe at the wonders of Allah. And as I learned the cruel lessons of life, Islam shone through as my guide.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Today we're going to look at a very interesting subject, and that is the myth of Islamic threat. The myth of the Islamic threat. Sometimes it's better known as Islamophobia. But there's so much more than just looking at the word Islamophobia. I have a fear of spiders, and so if you bring a spider, I'm terrified of them. So everywhere I go, I carry doom or some type of killer that will kill spiders too, because I don't want to know anything about spiders, I want to be near spiders. But sometimes people have a phobia about things that they've never actually had a chance to meet or confront or spend time with. And people say, well, the easiest way for you to get over the fear of spiders is perhaps I spend a bit of time around spiders. And I would always say to them, no, not interested. Even when we had to watch a film or when we were younger about spiders, I would leave the room because they terrified me. And so we call this the fear of spiders, we call it arachnophobia. And so some people have the same type of mentality that I had about spiders, about religions or about other people or peoples. And so Islamophobia is a fear of people without having any real reason to be afraid of them in the first place. So this is a study that has sort of become known amongst the Americans and the British. Not so much in the rest of the world. We don't really use the term Islamophobia or Islamophobia that much. For example, in South Africa, where I come from, people don't really use this word Islamophobia. We're not really afraid, people are not really afraid of Muslims. But we do have a problem with xenophobia. And for those of you who don't know what xenophobia, it means that I don't like you because of the country you come from. I don't like you because of the culture that you belong to. So I'm fearful or I have hatred towards you for whatever reason it might be. And mostly it's because you're foreign or because you come from another area than I do. In South Africa, we had a period of time where people had very, very strong xenophobic attitudes towards people from Zimbabwe. Many people will know what happened in Zimbabwe and the political unrest in Zimbabwe. And so people came across to South Africa trying to find freedom or a place to find some type of relative normalness in their life, some type of normality in their life. And so when they came across, hundreds and thousands of them came into South Africa, many people disliked the Zimbabweans. And so it began a whole xenophobic uprising. And eventually, over a period of time, this was worked out and people realized, but these people are the same people as us. They're only a few kilometers away from us and they're exactly the same people. They have the same blood, the same heart, the same loves, the same desires, the same fears. And so in South Africa, we don't have Islamophobia, but we had xenophobia. But other countries in the world, like Britain and in America, xenophobia is really well known, as well as Islamophobia. And sometimes they become intertwined with each other and you can't see where the one begins and the other one ends. You see, the fear of any person or fear of their religion or fear of the country they come from, many of these fears are unfounded. You see, many people that came to settle in different parts of the world were settlers from other countries. So they were not treated any differently when they arrived in many of these countries, and they were welcomed. In many countries, there's a cross spectrum of different nationalities, of cultures and religions, and there's a tolerance. And so in Islam, there's the same tolerance and understanding of cultures and diversity as we would like the rest of the world to understand. So in this production, or today, in this short series that I'm going to do with you, I want to talk about Islamophobia and the fear of Muslims. There's no reason that you as a viewer need to be afraid of Muslims being in your area or afraid of Muslims being at your school or university or working in your business place. And so I'd like to break some of the myths that you may have heard or might believe about Muslims. And those people who are Muslims, take note of this because this can help you as well in explaining why you're not a threat to other people around you. You see, the media has a lot to play with the attitudes that we have. And so when we have a look at this, we'll have a look at the media. We'll look at negative stereotypes about Islam and how they have been seen by the West as the next threat. This is the next big enemy that is coming. Many times you hear the statement that says the enemy is within, or Islamic terrorism. Every time you see the news broadcast, it has something along those lines. Or you might even have heard the word, a holy war is heading our way. And so these are terms that people are fed with in the Western world, and they've read, well, the Muslims are coming, be careful, they're going to come. The other type of stereotype that we often see, and we'll also, inshallah, we'll deal with in this program, is the barbaric idea of Muslims, that Muslims are somehow barbaric and hateful, and they have no compassion, and they They don't care about their wives, and they don't care about children, and they don't care about just chopping somebody's hand off because they suspect they might have stolen something. We want to show you that this is not true in any way or form whatsoever. And so we ask that you would join this program, stay in this program, don't switch channels, try and learn a little bit about us, see that we are in fact people who are opposed to this type of practice without proper procedures being taking place. We don't judge anybody without proper procedures. We don't pass laws without a whole committee of people sitting down and discussing this together. It takes a very long time for things to be passed. We don't just in the afternoon put these things down. And then we also want to look at the nature of human beings and what we are afraid of as human beings and why we come up with these ideas of hate, why we come up with these ideas of fear and xenophobia and Islamophobia. So there are basically a couple of points that we're going to go through. And just to get you prepared for what's coming up, I'm going to give you a taste of some of the things that this course or this series will entail. So this course will entail the following information that will help you to perhaps break away from the Islamophobia idea. And you'll see that the consequences of having Islamophobic ideas can actually be dangerous. For example, when you stereotype people, you become prejudiced towards them. You start judging them outwardly. You say, well, because the person looks like this or that, you judge them outwardly. So prejudice and stereotyping can be very, very dangerous. There's also defamation slander, where people will say something about a person that is not true, is not founded. They'll say that all Muslims are terrorists, for example, or all Muslims are wife beaters. All these type of things that are totally untrue, but they are defamation. They cause slander, and they're very difficult to remove from people. And this is the attack by the media very often. Not all media, must acknowledge the fact that many media do not do this. I've seen many broadcasting networks that try to give the true perspective and the true idea. But sometimes we have the media who purposefully distort the truth to get more people to read their magazines, watch their programs, or listen into their radio podcasts. Then there's discrimination. And what discrimination does is it alienates people from one another. When you discriminate against someone, you cause alienation. And alienation means you're on your own. So if you feel, say you're in school, maybe a university or school-going person, and you go to school and you know what it's like if somebody alienates you in the class or they discriminate against you, maybe because you wear glasses, maybe because you're a little bit overweight, maybe it's because you're not overweight, maybe it's because you've got red hair, whatever it might be that you're discriminated against, maybe it's because of the color of your skin. Whatever you're discriminating against, you know how horrible it feels. And you think, why can't people see beyond this? Why can't they see who I actually am? And so discrimination causes alienation, and people want to be by themselves. And alienation can cause a whole great combination of problems later in life. So this is what we're going to, inshallah, look at as well, how that we need to look at these consequences. By having discrimination, it causes alienation. Then we need to look at profiling. And profiling breaches our civil liberties. Now, in many countries in the world, we have liberties, and civil liberties and rights and things that we stand for, that we allow to have a constitution that protects us or whatever. But the minute we start profiling people, all these constitutional rights will disappear and they go out the window. You know, some of the brothers in London, I have seen that they have a little pocket guard to their civil liberties and civil rights. And what they do is whenever they come across a situation that they don't know how to deal with, they open this card and it tells them, as a Muslim, these are your civil liberties. How have we got to a situation in the world where people have to have a little card in their pocket where they have to take it out and refer to it and see what they're supposed to do in this situation? What happened to the days when you could just walk through the streets quite happily without being randomly selected to be searched, randomly stopped at stop streets, randomly checked for an extra checking at airport? What happened to the days when you were just able to do that? What happened to the days when you could pick up a newspaper and it didn't start with the word Muslim? So there is a lot of problem with profiling, and so we need to look and see how profiling has actually breached our rights and taken away our liberties and our freedom. And how do we deal with that? Do we act negatively by having protest marches and screaming and doing terrible things and burning flags, or do we do it in a softer way where we go and we speak gently to people? Some people will say that if you speak gently, no one will listen. Some people say if you speak too loudly, the wrong people listen. So how do we deal with this situation? Now, there are also another things like hate crimes. And when we think of hate crimes, it also are consequences. What are the consequences of hate crimes? When we think of hate crimes, what is it that we think of? We think of someone being beaten up. We think of Islamophobic beatings, somebody being beaten up as they leave the mosque, or maybe when they're walking alone after a soccer practice, or maybe playing cricket or going swimming or horse riding or something, they get attacked. And so hate crime is not just physical attack, it also verbal attacks. So when somebody is verbally abused, when they walk down the street and they say a ninja, or they call you a terrorist and things like that, it starts to eat up at you and starts to eat away at you, and you start getting angrier and angrier and angrier. How do we deal with this situation? How do we remove this as Muslims? And then, of course, there is vandalism, arson, attacks on mosques, vandalism of any religious or spiritual leader amongst the Muslim community. People do cartoons and may say horrible things about Muslims and about our prophets and about the Holy Quran. And so we see these things happening all the time. And of course, the worst result of all of that is when people blaspheme or when they commit murder and actually take somebody's life. So we can see the consequences for prejudice, for defamation of character, for slander, for discrimination, for profiling, and for hate crimes. You see, we've seen the reactions for what happens. Now we're going to take a short break, and when we get back from the break, we're going to continue looking at the consequences and how to deal with Islamophobia. Rahmani Rahim, Assalamu alaikum, and welcome back. We are looking at Islamophobia and the consequences of Islamophobia. We saw in the first part of this episode that prejudice, defamation of character, slander, profiling, hate crimes, these are all things that work negatively against Muslims. And they, of course, when Muslims are treated like this, they want to react, or they get hurt and they feel bad about the situation that they're in. So let's have a look at what's happened over the years since September 11th took place. From September 11th, we see that the years predating September 11th and what happened in September 11th, how were Muslims treated? And we have a statistic that I've looked at, and it's available on the internet. You can look under Islamophobia. If you type Islamophobia in, you'll have many statistics that you can see. And one of them is how violence has increased in society in just one country. And violence increased in America from 13 in a year to 303 in 1 year period. So from 13 to 103, you can see this has happened. Hate crimes have gone up from 56 to 72. Hate messages and harassments have gone up from 149 to 687. From false arrests for people that are suspected for doing something they didn't do went up from 4 to 224. From airport profiling, in 1995 it was 0. In 2001 it was 191. In workplace discrimination it was 0. And after September 11th it was 166. School discrimination it was 0. And after September 11th it was 74. And so the total number of instances where it was required for investigation or criminal action to take place against the person, or investigation against the person, went from 222 to 1,717. So you can see that there's definitely been an increase of Islamophobic occurrences throughout the world, and that's just one country. So what would we find in places like France at the moment, where we see situations are getting worse and worse and worse? So the number of discrimination complaints from, say, 1995, which was only 80, to 2005, 2003, which is already up in the 700s. So it went from 80 to over 700 complaints of people fearing or hating or doing something against Muslims. So yes, this is real. People say you're exaggerating. You're thinking that people are discriminating against you. It's not a think. We know. We can see this. And what is the origins of Islamophobia? What is the origins where this comes from? And we find that the origins of this hate or this detest for Muslims or this fear or anxiety for Muslims isn't something new. It is based on deeply rooted cultural bias. And it's not something that just came up yesterday. It's something that's been around for a while. If we look at the Crusader times in the Inquisition, which is the 11th to the 15th century, for five centuries there was a holy war. And this holy war was against the heretics. And so if you read the Catholic Encyclopedia, you will see it talks about how the Muslims were and how there was prejudice and detest and hate for the Muslim community. So you look at the Crusaders and Inquisition, this is what happened. There was already an Islamophobic, deep-rooted hate at that time. And of course, when the Muslims fought back against what was happening, the media slanted it and the history books slanted against how they massacred the Crusaders and the Inquisition. But it wasn't like that. They were living there in harmony, and especially in what is today known, commonly known by people as the Promised Land. People in the Promised Land were living in peace and harmony. The Christian, the Jew, and the Muslim were living together in harmony. And then when the Inquisition took place, or when the Crusades took place, there was a war. Many Christians were killed by Christians. Many Jews were killed by Christians. along with them were Muslims. And so when the Muslims fought back, people only remembered their fighting back. They didn't remember what happened to them, how they were persecuted, how they were massacred, how they were destroyed, along with Christians and Jews, how the Christians and Jews and Muslims stood together and fought against this apostasy, this evil that had come into the country at that time. Then we have the Renaissance, which was in the 17th and 18th century. So in the 17th and 18th century, you had Muslims who were under persecution yet again, and this is under Voltaire. And if you look in your history, you have a look what happened there, you see that there were many writings and many books written against the Muslims. Muslims started to become the stereotype idiot that we now see portrayed in many of the comic books, many of the children's programs, many of the productions that are around. And so by the time the colonial time began, up to the 1960s, the Oriental Arab and the Muslim was portrayed as a primitive, almost monkey-like creature. Long beard, not intelligent, big bottom lip, walking around with a towel on his head and screaming and shouting. If you remember Raiders of the Lost Ark, you see the Arab guy running towards whoever the lead actor is. I don't know who his name is. I don't watch that many movies. As he runs towards him, he runs with the sword, and the main actor pulls out his gun and shoots him and carries on walking. And he's like, it's made out as if the Arab is stupid. He doesn't know that the man has a gun, and he tries to attack him with a sword, and so he doesn't succeed. And so it started with the idea of projecting stupidity, ignorance. These are savages. These are people without any intelligence. So it started there. So the origins of Islamophobia, the origins of prejudice, had started long before September the 11th. So it's not exactly, we can't say that prejudice started on September 11th. September 11th was just the catalyst. It was a springboard from which deep-seated, rooted hatred had already been fed. So there are basically four myths that we are going to look at when we look at the myths that feed this hate and the origins of hate that have been given through the media, through comic books, through children's programs, even in Aladdin and films like that and plays like that. They show that the genies and jinn, and they show that side of Islam, and people will get the idea that we consult with witches and we consult with magic. And unfortunately, there are a tiny microscopic 0.01% of Muslims that do practice this. But the 99% of the Muslims, we do not practice this. But unfortunately, they've taken that one side and they've used that one side only. So what feeds the myth? What feeds the myth of Islamophobia? What creates people hating Muslims and continues this idea? Well, the first myth is that people believe that all Muslims belong to one Islamic bloc. In other words, we are one gigantic Muslim bloc, and we all think collectively. In other words, we somehow robots, or we have no free will, or that we all just are connected into, all our cell phones are connected to the same network, and then when somebody presses the button, all the cell phones in the world to every Muslim are rung, and then we're all gonna suddenly attack all at the same time. This is the idea. People have the idea that we are spurned into war, into act, at just one phone call, and we're all gonna go into jihad, we're all gonna go into holy war, and that somehow a fatwa has been passed down, that we're all gonna adhere to this immediately. So this is what people fear. They believe that there's a man with a long beard, and he sits there on a chair, and he's got his cell phone ready, and he's got his finger on the pulse, and he's gonna push that button. And when he pushes that button, a fatwa is given throughout the world, and we're all gonna go into this jihad. That is myth number one. Myth number two is that they believe that Islam preaches violence against non-Muslims, that we are waiting at every corner, and as a non-Muslim comes around the corner and it's nice and dark at night, we're going to pounce him and we're going to attack him. And if he doesn't become a Muslim, we're going to kill him, that we hate them. No, this is also not true. And that every single person who is not a Muslim, we call an infidel. When he walks past and goes past us in the street, we go, that guy we're going to do jihad on, he's an infidel. That's how all Muslims speak. This again is myth number two, and this is not true at all. The third one is that we are in terrorist blocks and we are terrorist cells everywhere in the world. So every time you see two or three Muslims sitting down to have a meal, they're not actually having a meal. They're actually sitting down to plot the next bombing or the next attack on some innocent group. And now they've even gone even further. If you watch a television program called 24, they've got even the beggar. There's a beggar sitting on the side of the road. He's got holes in his clothes. He smells, he stinks. And what happens is one of the agents, one of the Muslim agents, and according to the way Hollywood is doing this now, comes up to this man, and he's a sleeper agent. And he lies there, and he's sitting there, and he's just waiting for this fatwa to be given. Myth number one. And when this fatwa is given, he's going to jump up and pull out from under his cloak some AK-47 or a whole lot of bombs or intricate nuclear fusion technology. This is the type of thing that people have been seeing. This is the type of thing that people are being told. So they believe that it's somehow your religious duty to sit there and wait. And you can, even if you're poor and you're bankrupt, you sit on the side of the road. And again, like when number two idea comes through, when the fatwa is given, when the cell phone call goes out, everyone will start reacting. And so they believe that Muslims have no free will and that they have no fundamental rights and everybody just thinks like a robot. This is myth number three, that all Muslims are terrorists and ready to go into action to go kill. And then obviously myth number four, which is the one that's most well known and the one that gets the most attention, is that all Muslim women are oppressed, all Muslim women have no rights, they have no say. In fact, we encourage them to be ignorant and stupid, and we try and find the youngest girls we can, and then we marry them. This is a myth that many, many people believe, and this is a myth that has helped to promote this Islamophobia, this hate, this test for Muslim men and women throughout the world, whether they're young or old. I remember myself being around in a couple of years ago, and I see this has now made it onto the internet, where when I was a Christian priest, we used to go and stand outside mosques, and we used to call the little children, 7, 8 years old, and used to tell them that they needed to become Christians. And these little children used to tell us, but we believe that Jesus is the prophet, he's the messenger of Allah. And we used to try and get through to them, and so we used to think that the children were oppressed, we thought they were brainwashed, we thought the women were oppressed and they were brainwashed. And only as I became a Muslim 7 years ago, that I suddenly realized this couldn't be further from the truth. That these children are dedicated to the truth, they are dedicated to understanding the truth, they are encouraged to search for themselves. So let's have a look at the basic tenets, the general tenets of Islamophobia. Islam means peace, it means submitting to the will of God. This is what the word Islam means. It means a number of things. It doesn't just mean submission to the will of God. It also means peace. It means self-restraint and self-surrender to the will of God. It has both of these meanings to it. Now sometimes we just want to say that Islam means peace. And we say, yeah, I'm Muslim, we just mean peace. It doesn't just mean peace. Peace is one of the parts of the word Islam. It has the word salam in it, salam, which means peace. But it also has the word submission. It actually means submission. It means that we submit our will to the will of God. Now, if the will of God is that all men should be free, if it's the will of God that there should be no abuse of women, if it's the will of God that man and woman should have exactly the same rights, then we are not going to go against that. We as Muslims are going to promote that. So if we see an atrocity taking place, if we see someone being injured, if we see someone being hurt, if we see someone being discriminated against, we will stand up. We will go and we'll stop that. We're not going to sit back and say, oh, it's terrible that women are being abused, and then give a 10 rand or $10 or £5 towards this organization. We're actually going to physically get up and do something about it. And because we stand up and do something about it, people get upset and they say, you guys are an extremist. How is it that we can be extremists if we are standing up for truth, if we are standing up for what is right? When a woman is forced to sell her body and do favors so that she can get an income, do we as the community of the world stand back and say, it's terrible, prostitution is terrible, or do we do something about it? As Muslims, we go do something about it. We try and help that woman to find another type of job, to find other work. So you see, generally, Islam means that we are a religion of peace, a religion of self-surrender to the will of Allah, which means we obey Allah. Now that's all we have time for in today's program. But to sum up, Islamophobia hasn't come up just out of nowhere. It's tied together with xenophobia, which means it has something to do with identity as well. But we as Muslims, we care about people, we love people, and we are submitters to the will of Allah. That means we obey the laws of God. We want you to understand the laws of God. And the way for you to understand the laws of God is to search and read the Quran. From me, Arib Islam, until the next time we meet, Assalamu alaikum.